Hey, this is Evan Longoria of your San Francisco Giants, and you're listening to TortureCast.
You're listening to a podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. Let's go, Giants! With hosts Willie Dills, Chad King, Ben Lee, and Eric Nathanson. Dedicated to the greatest team in Major League Baseball, the San Francisco Giants. This is TortureCast.
It's Thursday, May 3rd, 2018, and this is episode 141 of The TortureCast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. I'm your host, Chad King, and joining me once again from Georgia is Eric Nathanson. How you doing, Eric?
Doing well. The Giants are coming to my state. I'm not going to get the chance to see them, but it'll be nice to have them on the local TV.
Oh, that's right. I guess you'll get the local television. Although you stream most of your games anyway. You'll just get maybe higher fidelity or something now?
No, I honestly, this year, the MLB TV through the Amazon Fire Stick has been like amazing HD. Every Giants game has been crystal clear. Yeah, I just have to put up with Chip Carey for 3 days.
Yeah, that's funny. Grew up on Skip Carey, of course, so as most of the country did. It was that and WGN, of course, with right. Steve Stone and those guys. It's funny how that happened growing up, and, you know, cable has always been around since the 80s, but the only international kind of cable broadcasts we got of regular hometown games were the Cubs and the Braves on TBS and WGN. So I wonder if that had a lot to do with who became a fan back in the 80s and maybe even the early 90s. You know what I mean? Like someone growing up in California who, you know, before, you know, all these Giants games were broadcast, it was very rare that the Giants Giants game was on TV. But any other day, you come home from school, you pop on the tube, and the Braves game is starting or the Cubs game is starting. And as a kid, I used to do that all the time. I used to watch because that was like the only baseball you could watch.
It was. I loved, because WGN was local for me. Like, I didn't realize, because, you know, we didn't have the internets and stuff back then. I did not realize that the Cubs games were getting broadcast to, like, the whole country. Yeah. I had no idea. It took, like, to pretty much college age to find that out and meet people from Iowa. I'm like, how'd you grow up watching the games? WGN. What? You know, and it was a superstation, and I didn't even realize it was, like, on TBS's level. And then way back in the day, the Mets and WOR was like a superstation, and I remember being really young and cable's infancy, being able to get those games too. But I mean, I watched Braves games randomly on TBS when I was younger. Cubs was a given for me, though, and that's why I don't like Chip Carey. He came in after his grandfather Harry, he wasn't the right fit in Chicago either, which is okay. Yeah, Len Casper's done a good job, but, you know, I'll put up with them this weekend. It's worth it to watch the Giants and be able to actually, like, pause and, you know, or switch channels on a commercial break instead of sitting through dead screen.
Yeah, and you don't even have to put it on, you know, turn the sound on if you don't want to. If you get annoyed by Carey, so.
No, I'll probably put some music on.
So the Giants had a good week. We were looking forward to podcasting after the Dodgers series. We had to wait till after the Padres series. That's okay. It was three more games, and they did well over that same game, the seven-game stretch. They ended up winning five of them. They took 3 of 4 from L.A. and 2 of 3 from San Diego. So, hey, no complaints here. I think it's exactly what the doctor ordered. They're now 16-15. They finally reached the 500 mark. Now they're one game over in third place and 5.5 games back of Arizona, although Arizona is losing right now to L.A., so it's possible they'll be 5 games back. But I will say this. I don't care who's in first place. Whoever's playing the Dodgers needs to win. So I don't care if Arizona's in first place and extends the lead over the Giants. That's irrelevant.
Did you see my tweet last night? I wondered that aloud. No. I said, is it too early in the season to start rooting for the Dodgers because they're playing the first place Diamondbacks? And a bitter Giants fan immediately responded with yes. And I agree. You know, maybe later on in the season, after the All-Star break and L.A. scuffling and we're still chasing Arizona.
Yeah.
But you're right.
I'll agree with you there. It's different if the Giants, let's say we're in the race, And, you know, they were chasing Arizona and LA was out of the race at that point. Well, then, yeah, right then now, that's the only possible way you could say, well, I hate to say this, but I actually hope the Dodgers win tonight because it's not a threat for the Dodgers, you know, to overtake the Giants or to get that playoff position. But
we'll get there.
Yeah. Assumingly that, you know, the Dodgers are going to get better at some point, which we can talk about later with all their rash of injuries. You just kind of want to, I just want to bury them as far as I can, as far as they can get buried.
That'd
be nice to see. So the one thing that I think was amazing is at the beginning of the season, after Mad Bum went down, we kept saying they got to float around 500. We've been harping on this every recording. The other big thing was over their first 28 games, they played the Dodgers 10 times. And that was a real concern to both you and I and to a lot of other Giants fans, saying, man, if the Dodgers are playing like they should be and the Giants are down a few men, if they go like 2-8 or 3-7 during that stretch, they're going to get kind of buried in the standings before they can even get Mad Bum back. And they're going to have to somehow, you know, tread water during that time. And that they not only tread water, they beat the Dodgers 6 out of 10 times. So great, man. It's a little gravy on top, too.
Yeah, it kind of helped bury the Dodgers a little bit. Dodgers have struggled against the Giants and the Diamondbacks. And this homestand, 7-3, winning 3 series, 4 series in a row, for the first time since June of 2016 when they shot up to the best record. Like, the Giants looked like a good, complete baseball team. They got contributions from everybody. Austin Jackson pitched in. Evan Longoria. Nick Hundley had a day. You know, it came from everywhere. The Giants were better than a 500 club over the last few days, and I think they really started to show it.
Yeah, I think you have a note here about what they hit during this homestand.
Oh, well, that's been the problem. Everybody, and it's true, they were, I'm sure they were dead last in hitting with runners in scoring position before the homestand. And on the homestand, they hit a tick under 300. They hit 299 with runners in scoring position. They were 26 for 87. And that gets kind of skewed because they had 18 opportunities in the Padres game when they scored 9 runs to knock people in. And they were 5 for 18 on that one. So the Giants, like, kind of turned it around. Guys, like, Austin Jackson had 2 hits I can think of that drove in runs that we didn't expect. Yesterday, Brandon Crawford had a base hit, finally driving in somebody other than himself. Mm-hmm. You know, Brandon Belt contributed with a couple of shots off the walls, homers, Hundley poking the ball the other way. Like, there's a list of players, and I haven't even mentioned Posey or McCutcheon, you know?
Yeah, Posey's been almost the quiet one in this group, and he's been fine.
He really
has hit like 313 over the last week or whatever. He's doing his normal Posey things, but he's not, you know, nothing flashy. He's not hitting 3 bombs. He's not hitting bases clearing doubles. He's just kind of getting on base and being one of the guys that scores and knocking in a couple here and there. He's doing his job, but yeah, it's been a great performance by Austin Jackson, who finally woke up. He had that big bases loaded clearing double. He had another one against San Diego. Crawford, he's still struggling mightily, but he had a couple of well-timed hits. Brandon Belt has certainly caught fire. And, you know, you point this out, 299 with runners in scoring position over that 10-game stretch, that 10-game homestand, that, to me, was the biggest difference. If they hit their normal 190 or 200 or whatever they were before this homestand, they probably go 5-5 or 4-6 because some of those hits came with 2 outs and they were needed for a couple of those victories. So it really does tie into that timely hitting and how important it is to knock those guys in when they're set up, because the Giants haven't been too bad with getting guys on base. It's just been delivering them, and they finally delivered this weekend or the last homestand.
Yeah, and they've also I was looking into some of the numbers. Their bullpen, if you take out the 2 games that they gave up 15 runs against the Dodgers and the Nats, their bullpen on the homestand gave up 4 runs in 28 innings.
Yeah.
In what is that, eight other games. And they've been locked down. So if the Giants have been able to, because they're 13-3 now in scoring first, whenever the Giants have been able to score first, generally the pitching can fall in line. It's those games that they fall behind, you know, early. And it seems way back during the Arizona series in Arizona, like something clicked where they kind of stopped waiting around and went for it. And they're hitting the ball with guys on, and the relief pitching. My mind went somewhere. They've been, when they get a lead, they generally shut it down. They're playing really good from ahead. You know, the when the bullpen lines up to bring in the guys like, I hate to say it like this now, Dyson, he's become a stalwart again. Dyson, Watson, when you can line up Dyson, Watson, and Strickland on the back end, the Giants are usually good. But when you have to bounce around and go with Pierce Johnson and other guys, not to say Pierce Johnson or DJ Snelton is having a rough time, but having that, you know, back end of the bullpen with Watson and Strickland and now Dyson stepping up next to Maranta, who's been struggling a little bit lately, it's really helped, you know, them prevent other teams from scoring and giving them an opportunity to pile on. Because, like, yesterday they scored a couple times late. They did it against the Dodgers last Sunday. You know, they've done a really, really good job of, when they put teams away, burying them instead of just playing 3-2 ball games.
So Al Suarez was called back up to replace Johnny Cueto, and he would have had the start on, what was that? Monday, I guess, or Tuesday. I think it was Tuesday start he would have had. And Suarez pitched instead, and they did lose that game. Who knows what would have happened if Cueto had pitched. But some bad news that potentially could be coming for the Giants right now. And Cueto, who's had a stiff forearm since last year, rest has always kind of helped it. Apparently something might be a little different right now. And the story is, so far, he's had an MRI, and no one has come back and said, it's fine. Come back and said he is going to seek a couple or three extra opinions, including
James Andrews.
Thanks, James Andrews. He's, of course, synonymous with Tommy John surgery. And No one's talking about rest for Cueto right now. And even Bochy acknowledged that this could be bad. They don't know yet, but I don't know, Eric. It just seems like the minutia coming out of the clubhouse is one kind of suggesting it might be a UCL tear, which would mean Tommy John surgery. And that's not conclusive yet. That's not a certainty yet. But just the way they're playing this close to the vest and they're not clearing him on anything, and the fact that he's getting two or three opinions and seeing this doctor down in the Southeast when they go to Atlanta, I guess they're there now, that's not good. And all I can say is we're going to collectively hold our breaths and just assume that it's not going to be this bad, because if, for whatever reason, it is a UCL tear and they go with Tommy John surgery, clearly Cueto's out for the year plus the beginning of next year as well. And that's just going to devastate the Giants season. To lose Mad Bum for a third of the season and then to potentially lose Johnny Cueto for more than two-thirds, almost, you know, more than three-quarters of a season, you know, Not to say postseason is impossible, but at that point, it's going to be rather difficult. I don't think an Al Suarez is going to duplicate what a Johnny Cueto could do, especially where Cueto has been this year. I mean, he finally gave up more than one earned run last start.
Two runs in one game. Oy.
It was a very pedestrian 2 runs in 6 innings. Oh, my God. His ERA was 3 for the game. But his ERA almost tripled from, what, like 0.35 to 0.84, I believe it stands at right now. So he's dominating the league in terms of his statistics, but it's going to be a huge blow no matter what, because it looks like even if it is rest, it would probably be something like a 6-week kind of window. This is not a 2-week DL stint. So the Giants are going to be without Cueto for a significant amount of time. The question is, how long will that significant time be? Is it going to be 6 weeks
or
is
it going to
be 15 months?
I think he's gone. Yeah, I think he's gone. I think it's going to be a surgery type thing. I don't know. In my head, I've already got it chalked up that he's gone, but I also don't think it's that bad. If they can put stuff together like this with Cueto as their ace, when Bumgarner comes back, they should still be okay. Andy Suarez could carry the load for a little bit. He's got good stuff. He's got good poise, and I think he's going to stay over Beedy. But to think that Holland and Samardzija are now the veterans of the rotation, that's, I think, the part that all Giants fans are having a hard time grasping. I mean, Holland got his first win yesterday, and he was aided by, you know, 9 runs. It's not like he's out there shutting people out. And Samardzija, his next start will be in Philly on Monday, and we got to hope that the ball doesn't bounce around out there. That, you know, yeah, they're the two veteran leaders now. And then it's, you know, Ty Block, who's kind of a veteran, Chris Stratton, who's a half a veteran, and Andy Suarez, who's just coming up for his, you know, I think he's staying. They were talking on the broadcast yesterday. He didn't even pack. He thought he was coming up for a spot start. So when he gets to Atlanta, like today, they're going to go shopping. You know, I don't know. I mean, Suarez did well. I know he got lit up and not lit up. He got hit a little harder in his first start than he did in his last start. I know Stratton got lit up last Saturday against the Dodgers, but that kind of got buried between Panda pitching, the fact that Stratton had a baby, and everybody just kind of excused the jet lag and the baby and everything like that, and the fact that Cueto pitched so brilliantly that night as well. Mm-hmm. You know, we all kind of forgot about Stratton having a rough go of it, so hopefully he can bounce back. I think they can keep them around 500. I think this pitching staff, and then you replace Holland with Bumgarner when he comes back. I think this offense can keep them afloat. I think they've shown by scoring 5 runs a game over the homestand that they can finally, you know, string together many at bats with runners on base, keep the line moving, and they're hitting dingers.
Yeah.
I mean, who the hell expects?
The offense has been fun to watch the last couple weeks.
Yeah. Every time somebody hits a homer, it's like 2-run homer or 3-run homer, too. It's like really, really weird. Runs that, like, last year we're all like, you know, or two, even 2-3 years ago, even back in 14, we were looking for runs in this way.
Yeah.
You know, they had streaks of solo shots, and now this year it's a 2-run bomb, a 3-run bomb. Longo's got like 2 3-run bombs. Hundley's both are 2 runs. Mac has driven in 2 runs every time he homers. It's just weird.
I know. I don't think they have a grand slam yet this year, do they?
No, they don't.
Yeah. What's funny is last week when Boston was in town against the A's, so this is like a week and a half ago, Boston had already hit their 5th Grand Slam of the year. That's crazy. I don't know if they're up to 6 or 7 by now, but that team puts runners on base. I mean, boy, if we had Boston's offense playing for this team, I think the Giants would be in first place right now. But that's another story. But with Matt coming back,
there's no significant injury to the Giants starting lineup.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right about that. It's just, you know, if you assume Cueto was on target to having one of his Cueto-like years, you know, a 2.5 to 3.0 ERA kind of frame, you know, maybe put away 15 wins or so. And that was going to be extremely valuable, that a Suarez or some of these other guys cannot replace. So you're going to have to rely on a couple of, you know, spot starts, lucky starts, and also the offense coming through, because Cueto's 0.84 ERA just cannot be matched at this point. Not suggesting he was going to sustain that, but... No. He looked like he was on a good career trajectory, which is really odd when you think about how he's now having these UCL and forearm issues, despite the fact that he's been pitching so well. Because apparently it's been sore his last couple of starts, but he's been fine in terms of his performance. So maybe he's just been gutting it out. Maybe he doesn't want to acknowledge the truth. Maybe something else went a little bit further, ripped a little bit further during his last start. I don't know. But it's going to be pretty crushing to lose him for potentially this year. And then if it is Tommy John, it would bleed into next year, because typical recovery is 12 to 15 months. So,
yeah. I mean, and then the Giants are going to start questioning the contract internally because of how bad he was and how much time he missed last year. Combine that with this year and then what he misses next year, that'll be 2 out of the 5 years missed.
Yep.
And it'll feel like a sunken cost if he doesn't come back and do something. I like Cueto. I hope he's okay, but like the Giants have never won. I know it sounds weird, but the Johnny Cueto was never the leader. He's fun, but it's not like losing a Bumgarner. It's not like losing a Buster Posey or even a right. You know, it's still Cueto, but you're right. It's gonna be hard to replace. There's like you're talking about a difference of 5 or 6 wins possibly.
Yeah. Well, speaking of Tommy John, we got a guy back from Tommy John surgery, and that's one Mr. Will Smith. So that was great to see him back out on the bump against San Diego. I think he's going to be that valuable lefty in the pen, and what can you say? He's going to single-handedly, I think, win a couple 3 games this year just with his, you know, lefty specialty.
And he had everything working. It was nice to see. He had this huge smile coming off the field on his face. He like slapped his leg like a rookie would after striking out Eric Hosmer. Mm-hmm. And Hundley flipped him the ball, and it's already in a Lucite case. You know, that's neat. That's a big moment for ball players if they can come all the way back from that. Baggerly wrote a really good thing on The Athletic about it. and how Will Smith's going to go burn his folder full of exercises and rehabs and all the stuff that he had to do over the last, you know, 16 months, 18, whatever long it was. And he's going to go burn it because, you know, he's now been on a big league mound. And he came into the perfect situation yesterday. Huge lead, no real pressure.
Yep.
You know, Bochy's managed to – this is the hidden gem of this homestand. Bochy pushed the right buttons at the right times. There was a couple instances I wasn't – but like pitching Sandoval on Saturday in the ninth inning mm-hmm. of the first game was just the absolute perfect decision. Brought levity to a clubhouse that was getting their ass handed to them. You know, it was a thing Bochy said he was never going to do. It was Panda. He threw a perfect inning, you know, and it kind of like you forget that you lost by 9 runs and they came out and won the nightcap. You know, they could have totally struggled with the rest of the Dodgers series, but that like one moment of levity was the perfect button for Bochy to push. And he did it with Will Smith yesterday, too. So now Will has confidence in a 1-run game, in a 2-run mm-hmm. game, in a tie game to pitch in the same situation. You know, it was good to see. And between him and Tony Watson on the back end, both those guys can get righties and lefties out. Like, they're neither of them are straight-up specialists. And that's what makes them so valuable. Osich needs to keep performing if he wants to stay.
Yeah, he may not at this rate. But I agree with you. Bochy has pushed a lot of the right buttons. It's kind of nice to see him back in that groove because I think over the last year or so, there were a lot of times he was pushing the wrong button. And just things were getting blown up. And part of that is just there probably wasn't a right option at that time. They didn't have the arsenal right to cope with the situation. And so he had to go with someone, and it just didn't work out almost every time. That's why they had 98 losses last year. But that was a fun one. Unfortunately, I was not watching at the time. I had already turned the game off because they were getting blown out.
I did
out.
Too. Yep, and so, I did. So you know, I went outside. And it's like, no.
It's like, I know you never know what you're going to see in a baseball game, and that's one thing they always say. I get that, but, you know, we are humans. We have other things in our lives that we need to do, and I'm not going to sit around and watch the Giants get destroyed just so some weird play that happens I was glad that I watched, you know? There wasn't going to be a perfect game or a no-hitter or anything like that or a 4-home-run game, so did not expect that, but I think it was a great, great move because – I mean, if he had gotten blown out, maybe not so much, of course. But he ended up having the perfect inning. He was throwing a fastball at 88 miles an hour, dropped in a 70-mile-an-hour curveball. That just
and he was
great.
Getting it and firing. It was like it was the quickest inning all day and the only 1-2-3 inning of that game of that.
The only 1-2-3 inning. That was what's so great about it. He had 11 pitches, and 8 of them were strikes. He was grooving it, and it did. It brought a moment of levity to the clubhouse. They were to laugh about it after in between games, and it just kind of reset their tone to go into game 2 with like, all right, just forget about game number 1. We had a good time there at the end. You know, this is just baseball. We get it. We get 0-0 yeah. again, and they went out and they won. So
it's weird too because it highlighted Pablo's role with the team. Pablo is in the sure I'll do whatever mode, you know, and the Giants are willing to take it. Like, he's been kind of valuable in that respect, even though he's not like hitting a ton, but he's willing to do whatever it takes, be around, you know. He's a clubhouse guy as it is, so like if he were to disappear from the equation, it would change the dynamics. I think he's one of the guys that keeps it happy and light, and plus he knows how to win, and the Giants are trying to remember how to win. They forgot how much the line coming into this year is they forgot how much they hated to lose. And I feel like we've watched them over this homestand remember how much they hated to lose. I mean, that comeback in the ninth inning against the Padres on Monday night,
yeah,
they were down 2 heading into the bottom. And then they would just – Buster Posey had a 10-pitch at bat that worked for the walk. He then went from first to third faster than he's gone first to third in any other time in the Statcast era. Like by like 2.5 seconds or miles an hour or something like that too. So like he really put the hustle on. And then Hundley, like I don't know, it seemed like a done deal already when he came up to hit, and he was able to work for his pitch. It was a different team. They don't want to die so much this year. Last year they rolled right over and died, and this year they don't roll over and die. And Bochy has a lot to do with, you know, changing that atmosphere with doing him, and so do these other guys. This homestand was just so positive in so many ways. Like, the Giants needed it, because if they had gone 5-5, 4-6, and they were a few games under, everybody would be like, oh, crap, here we go again.
Sorry about the dog in the background there. That's always great when your dog barks at your podcasting when the wife gets home. great.
Well, I can't wait till my puppies are old enough and good enough to just come. They love to chill under my desk, but they can't control themselves. Yes. So I can't really keep them in here right now. So I look forward to a time when they're just going to be laying at my feet while we're recording, because they love it. It's their little den underneath the desk.
Yeah, well, my dog's 14 years old, so she's a little hoarse, but she's all good. Now, Pablo was on KNBR yesterday getting interviewed by Gary and Larry, our local station here. And he was on the patio. It was before the afternoon game, so they had him live right in front of AT&T Park. And I listened to most of the interview, and it was really kind of enlightening. They actually asked him a couple of tough questions about Boston. Like, why did you leave? Like, seriously, what about Boston? Was it really the $5 million? Was it really this? Was it really that? And you could tell he didn't really want to answer those questions. He was a little upset probably about being asked those questions. But they talked about his pitching performance, and he just said that he had so much fun on the mound. And that he didn't even know he had a curveball. He just tried it, and it worked. And he's dead serious too. He's like, I don't even practice it. I just tried it, and it worked. And he's like, all right, cool. And they said, so you shook off Hundley, didn't you? And he's like, yeah, I did. And they're like, what did you shake off? And he's like, he called for a curveball. I just wanted a fastball then. So he did that. But he told Boach, he was, you know, in the interview, he was saying that, look, Skip, I'll do anything. I'll catch, I'll pitch, I'll play any position. I'll play first, second, third, outfield. I'll coach third base. I'll coach first base. I'll go, like, he starts talking about, you know, I'll go get bats. I'll go do whatever you want to do. I just want to help this team. And he really reflected about things that are important in his life. He has like a 6-month-old and a 2-year-old now, and he knows how important life is, but he's also just really chilled out and relaxed, and he put way too much pressure on himself in Boston. And that was probably, he said, the number one mistake he made, is that he just put way too much pressure on himself in Boston because of the money. And now he's back in San Francisco. He loves it. He wishes he never left. People are still recognizing him on the street, buying him drinks, you know, all those things. I think you could genuinely tell Panda is very, very happy to be back in San Francisco. And yeah, he's providing a little bit of that spark in the clubhouse in terms of his attitude. I think he's repaired most of the damage that he caused with fans and teammates in the front office when he left, because he did say some disparaging things about the Giants, which he fully regrets now. And he says he wants to retire as a Giant. So, but he's like, you know, I don't know how long that will be. You know, it could be this year, it could be 3 years from now. But it was cool to hear him be so candid about it.
Yeah, he turned human, you know. Life hit him in the face, and he's had to deal with it.
Yeah.
And we all like the comforts of home, and San Francisco's home to him. You know, it's where he grew up, basically. He just forgot what that was like. I can't blame him. We all go for the brass ring, you know.
Yeah, yeah. And they're asking about his idols. I didn't know this, but his two idols were the Big Cat and Omar Vizquel.
Oh, wow.
So he actually overlapped with Omar in 2008. So he said it was just incredible to be at third base while his idol is at shortstop, you know, in the same game. So that was something I didn't realize, that those were his two idols growing up. So that was pretty cool. It's funny to hear him say that those are his idols, because, you know, I've been like a full-grown adult since those guys were in the league.
Yes.
Andre Scalarraga and Omar Vizquel. So.
I can see Galarraga in his batting stance a little bit now that I think about it. Because the way the Big Cat, you know, kind of hunched his shoulders, I kind of see that with Pablo a little bit.
All right, so I'm going to go through a little injury update and go back to Alan here, Alan Hansen. But Joe Panic, he did have surgery to repair a torn UCL in his left thumb. And that... he was back at the Giants clubhouse on Wednesday. Apparently he was in good spirits and he had a successful operation. I guess it's over on the top side of his hand, so the rehab isn't going to be as complicated as some other thumb injuries. So they're expecting about 6 weeks before he's back, which actually kind of lines up with the timetable for Bumgarner's return. So it might be that we see those two returning to the lineup within days of each other. But in the meantime, they did call up Alan Hansen. And to be honest, I didn't know really anything about this kid. He's 25 years old from the Dominican Republic. He does have a couple more than cups of coffee with the Pirates and the White Sox. He's got 262 career at-bats, career hitter average around 221, and he's got five bombs. He, of course, has already had one with the Giants that he hit the other day.
which is a big so problem. Weird, so unexpected, out of nowhere.
It was so weird, I know, to see this little guy do that. But
well, apparently, he only can play for organizations that have black in their colors.
So, oh, Pirates, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, because I remember seeing him both with funny? Pittsburgh and briefly with the White Sox, and I'm like, he looks the same everywhere he goes, and it's because he's always been in, you know, black dominant. It's just funny.
Not like the Cardinals or the Reds or something, yeah.
Right, right. You can go blue, red, black. No, everything's got black in it.
Yeah. Well, that's great. Oh, yeah, and his nickname is El Chamaquito, which I guess is colloquial in Spanish for kid or guy or kiddo. So it's like, hey, kiddo, hey, kid, something like that.
Oh, so he's like a little brother type.
Something like that, yeah.
He looks like, you know, he looks
he's
like
a speedster.
Hustles,
he's a smaller guy. Right? Yeah.
I don't know. Between him and Kelby, I think they can handle it. As Bochy said, they're going to ham and egg it.
Yep.
Panic is really the only serious injury they've got in the starting lineup right now. And the way Kelby has been swinging the bat, he feels like he's been in the middle of like three or four rallies in the last week. I think we're going to see a ton of him.
That's the thing. Tomlinson has been in the middle of a lot of these rallies, and he's had some great at-bats, and he's covering the plate. He's got a spindly, thin body, but he just is able to wave that bat and cover the strike zone, and he's going the other way with pitches, but he's driving it with pretty good power. You know, not power to the outfield, but, I mean, line drives. You know, he's poking these fairly hard line drives to for singles and doubles and in the middle of these rallies, so...
Yeah, he's got have quick to hands. Hold with him. I think his hands are quick. Are the second quickest behind Joe, probably.
Yeah. So I think they'll be okay. It's 6 weeks, but you know, Joe Panic. He's hitting what 284, something like that. He had those three home runs in the beginning, the first three games of the season, basically, and he hasn't hit one since, which is really odd how it goes in streaks like that. So yeah, they're not going to really miss any power. They might miss a couple of base hits. And maybe a play or two in the field. It shouldn't be really significant as far as a dip. So they should be okay covering with those two guys, Hanson and Tomlinson. So Bumgarner has been cleared to throw. I haven't read any reports about any results of throwing. Have you?
No, not yet. All I've heard is the same, that he's allowed to start.
Mac Williamson will be coming off the 7-day concussion DL on Saturday, which... You know, we just were talking and singing his praises last podcast, and then he goes right out and slams his head against the sidewall. And just like, really? Come on, man. What's going on with his team? Thank God it was only a concussion, and he passed concussion protocol already, so he's going to be fine. But it was kind of scary to watch and go, man, he's just coming up and raking the ball, and now you got to take him right back out of the lineup? What the hell is going on here? But he'll be back. Hopefully he'll provide some of that extra pop in Atlanta and hopefully in Philly, because Philly is, you know, one of the most homer happy ballparks in the major leagues. And for him, you know, a routine fly ball might go out.
That's the truth. He hits it so flipping hard.
He does. Let me see him make, you know, hit an upper deck shot there in Citizens Bank Park.
That would be fun. Yeah, I could see that.
And then, not that we care at this point, I think we belabored this, but no update on Melanson. So whatever. Screw him at this point. Sorry, a little bitter, I guess.
That's all right. Strickland's doing fine. I know he gave up the homer to Hosmer the other night, but yeah. Hosmer was like red hot that entire series, and he did a good job driving the ball the other way. Strickland had a look on his face like, how the F did that guy hit that ball out there? And I kind of agreed with him.
Yeah, so well, I didn't find when that. You see it live or, you know, kind of from the pitcher's point of view, I didn't think it was out, but it just kept sailing opposite way. And I know a lot of people exploded on Twitter. Why do they put him in? God damn it, Bochy. Strikes again. And it's like, guys, his ERA is still under 2. I mean, what would you suggest? He's our best option right now. And he's not. That was the first game that they lost in which he blew something. You know what I mean? He had 2 blown saves. The Giants actually won those games. He has, 7 saves so far? 7 of 9. And this was not a safe situation. This was a tie game in the 9th inning. And yeah, he got the loss because he gave up a solo shot to Hosmer. But it's like, you know, it's going to happen, guys. He can't not be perfect every time he comes out into a high leverage situation. Now, I will say, if it's, you know, every other high leverage situation in which he's given up a run, even if his ERA stays low, yeah, maybe they're going to have that conversation. But I don't think they have another option right now.
Well, look at the three games they lost on the homestand. Two were blowouts, and one was that game. That was it. You know what I mean? That's pretty damn impressive if you ask me. And he saved two games
against L.A.
Yep.
So, you know, there you go.
I like Strickland. Yeah, he's doing his job well. I like him. I think if he's got a pitch this weekend, he'll do well again. He's from down here, and he was with Smoltz in the offseason, working on his pitching, understanding how to approach hitters better, and I think that's the results that have shown. I've never seen him throw so many curveballs and off-speed pitches, and it's like, finally, Strickland figured it out.
Yeah, he's maturing. It's not just mono-y-mono, hit my cheese. It's now he's becoming more of a pitcher, which is good to see.
Yep.
It's going to only lengthen his career. All right, we can talk about who's hot and who's not. We talked about Nick Hundley this week. He was 7-for-11 with 2 bombs and 6 RBI. And this is great to see because in the beginning of the season, he was hitting atom ball after atom ball. And he had nothing to show for it. And now things are falling and just falling over the fence, too. He had a home run yesterday, but he also had a double off the wall that I thought was gone when he hit it. I was watching the game live yesterday. So he almost had 2 bombs yesterday. But he's been driving in, 6 runs in the 5 games he played. He's been hot. He probably single-handedly won a couple of games for the Giants. He did with the walk-off,
of course. He scored 4 runs
yesterday.
Yeah.
Oh, and by the way, that game.
Every time he got on, they knocked him in. Yeah, go ahead.
The 3-run rally in the 9th inning. Do you know how many 2-out, 2-strike pitches the Giants had?
Something like 10 to 12 or something like
that. It was 8. Wow. 8 times they were down to their last strike. That's pretty impressive.
That's a game they lose last year. That's why I feel more confident about this team, because winners know how to win.
Yeah.
You know, we always talk about this even year magic and all this crap about how the Giants have champion blood and they know how to win, and then everybody seems to discount it when it comes to those, you know, situations. And they showed over this homestand that, yeah, they know how to win. You know, there's some guys here that are going to be able to take care of stuff. Hundley's been just amazing. Like, how the hell he's not starting somewhere else, I'll never know.
I know. Yeah, he decided to come back to San Francisco for the 1-year backup role, so we'll gladly take him.
I think he's going to stay until he retires, and then he's going to go into coaching. So yeah, I love having Nick Hundley.
So many catchers become coaches. Isn't that funny? But it's the truth.
Yeah.
They're so cerebral, too. Then you have Austin Jackson, Andrew McCutchen, and Buster Posey all went 5-for-16 individually, which isn't great. Wow. It's 313, but the reason I bring it up is because it's a pedestrian for Posey, but it's great for Austin Jackson and Kutch because both of their averages were floating around the Mendoza line. So we're starting to see a little life in them. We're definitely seeing life in Longo over the last 2+ weeks with the long ball and raising the average. So that's been great to see. And the 5-headed monster of Smith, Watson, Dyson, Guerin, and Johnson pitched 14 1/3 innings this week and gave up exactly zilch. No runs between the 5 of them. So there have been some tenants of the bullpen that have been really pitching lights out and getting out of some high-pressure situations. So those are some of the highlights this week.
Pierce has been a highlight. I like Pierce Johnson. I believe he came up with the Cubs, and so far he seemed like a guy that, like, I remember one day Guerin was on the mound and we're like, where'd this guy come from? And then suddenly he was still in the bullpen by the end of the year. I feel like Pierce Johnson's going to do the same thing.
And then just for kind of doubling down on last week's episode in which we talked about all the belt hate and we don't quite understand it, I sent this tweet out yesterday, so the stats may be just a day old. But Brandon Belt, I know you love him or you hate him. I don't know why he's polarizing. They even talked about it with Andrew Baggerly on KMBR the other day, just joking about how even a guy like Bags, who covers the team every day, is just like, look, I know he's streaky, but I don't understand the hate for this guy. I mean, he's like among the leaders in a lot of different categories. And so I was kind of just putting those stats together to look for my own. And, you know, as of yesterday, he's 8th in the National League in OPS. This is all position players, right? 8th in the National League in OPS. He's 2nd out of first baseman in all of Major League Baseball. He's 8th in the National League in slugging. He's 1st out of first baseman. He has the highest slugging percentage of any first baseman in all of baseball.
Wow, that's kind of surprising.
Yeah. He's 9th in the National League in on-base percentage, but 3rd as a first baseman. He's 22nd in the National League in batting average, but 4th in the rank of first baseman. And he's 11th in home runs in the National League, but again, 2nd out of first baseman. So, I mean, against his peers, he's first, second, third, or fourth in all of these major offensive categories in terms of his position. But even when you rank him amongst all players in the National League, he's in the top 10 of most of these. Okay, he's fine, guys. He's doing just fine. So yeah, let's just back off a little bit and let the guy play. And I'm sure he will go into his, you know, derpy giraffe shoulder slump at some point, and we'll all get pissed off again. But for right now, kind of like with Strickland as the closer, what other option do you think we have at first base? So he's doing fine.
There's no other option. Why would you want any other option? This is the perfect option for this team.
I mean,
the guy's best friend is the shortstop. It's like not even a joke. You know what I mean? They love each other. It's like the bromance they have in Chicago with Rizzo and Bryant.
Right.
Like, these guys are going to help feed off each other for years and, you know, have their circle around them with other guys. I saw Melanson threw them a surprise double baby shower because I guess both the Belts and Crawfords are pregnant right now.
Yeah.
And I saw that on Instagram the other day. So, you know what I mean? Like, you don't trade a guy like that, especially when he's productive. And that's very productive.
He's very productive right now. Very productive right now. Leading the team in home runs, too. Mm-hmm. All right, so we have to talk about the other side of the coin. Who is cold or who is not hot? So Gorkys, who been pretty hot most of the season, is 5 for his last 23. That's a .217 clip. Same with Crawford. However, that has actually raised his batting average, sadly.
He looked better. He did, though. He got the day off. What was it, Monday or Sunday? He looked better over the last few days. He had a single that drove in two runs yesterday, which had to have been a boost to the confidence.
Yeah, he's floating right around 200 right now. So he's I'm sure he's not feeling really good about his offense right now. But most people have kind of laid off of him because of what he brings to the table in terms of defense. But, what is this, the sixth, seventh year in the league? He's not going to hit 200 for the year, I know, but at the same time, he's kind of on a track to have one of his worst offensive years ever, so hopefully that turns around. Plenty of time to do it, but we got to see some more life in him. Chris Stratton, we talked about him. He finally got blown up, but I think a lot of people are just chalking it up to coming off the paternity leave. He's just had a kid, lack of sleep, jet lag, yada, 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 so I think everyone's going to give him a pass on that start and see what he does over his next, you know, 2 to 3 starts to see if there's any lingering issues. Not too worried about him.
He's starting the road trip, so he'll get two turns, you know?
Yeah, he'll get two turns, exactly. Derek Law, who, when he came up, I thought he was going to be the next stud in the bullpen, and it has just not turned out that way. He's really, really struggled over the last couple of years, and he's given up 5 earned runs in 3 innings pitched. So I think his season ERA now is 9.7 something or another. So he's...
Wow.
Yeah, he's one of those guys that might not be on the team too long. And, of course, Derek Holland, he was very marginal his last start. He had 5 innings and 3 runs, but over his 2 starts, which did occur during the week, 7 earned runs in 8 1/3 innings pitched. But he did get the win yesterday, which was good to see, but it was getting close. He was pitching in the 5th inning there, and Bochy was like, "God damn it, stop putting guys on base, Derek.
Yeah.
I don't want to have to pull you out. I'm trying to give you the win here." But, of course, you're never going to sacrifice a win or a game to give a pitcher a win. But he was able to squeeze through it.
Right, he sent up Ty Block to pinch hit for Derek Holland.
And then he sent Ty Block to pinch hit for Derek Holland. That was the weirdest thing.
Yeah, he had to because Kutch came out of the game after getting hit by the pitch, and thankfully that's just a bruise.
Yeah.
But, like, he had to do it, and I think that we saw Holland in the dugout, you know, with Bochy, and I think that Holland was kind of giving Bochy grief, like, really? You're going to send this kid out there to pinch hit for me? You know, it was a good moment for Holland because none of them had been really good moments for Holland yet.
No, and I was fine with him getting out of the game because he was not dominating that game. Yeah, in a normal situation, of course. Yeah, you're going to let, you know, the pitcher hit if you're going to pinch hit with another pitcher anyway, because you're right, Kutch went out, so they already had to burn a bench guy to go out there. Blanco went out to cover McCutcheon's spot. But,
and yeah, I wanted to double back.
Funny.
You mentioned Gorkys. I think we could – I don't have Blanco's stats in front of me, but he has not played as well over the last couple weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And Hunter's on his rehab assignment. Max coming back. Slater has proven to be okay out there. I think Gorky's and Blanco's days are numbered.
You think both of them?
And it, Yes, I think I think they'll be DFA'd at separate times, and I'm not sure if Gorky's clears waivers, but I could totally see Blanco, if he clears waivers, taking the assignment and going to Sacramento. Yeah. I'm not sure what would happen with Gorky's. You know, Blanco, though, he's left-handed. That's an advantage, but he hasn't been playing as well, and they could get the same production out of Hunter Pence and Austin Slater and Steven Duggar than they're getting out of Blanco and Gorky's.
Blanco is hitting 300 on the season, 18 for 60. And Gorky's is down to 250. He's but with fewer at bats, he's 12 for 48. Blanco's not. He actually has not been hitting too poorly here. 11 strikeouts, 60 at bats, only one RBI, which is pretty shocking.
In the last 14 days, I'm gonna pull it up. I bet it's not as good as because he started out hot. I'm totally gonna get screwed by this.
No, last 7 days he's 6 for 17, a 353 clip.
Yeah, but that's funny because he's 242 for the last 14 days. So it must be a week and a half ago that I'm thinking about. That's crazy. Yeah,
exactly right.
So I would say Blanco is probably safer at the moment than Gorky's, but I think that they're going to have to cut bait with these guys eventually just because they have depth and they need to get guys on the roster when they bring up that depth. Duggar is starting to play better and he's going to knock on the door pretty soon.
Exactly. All right, well, coming up for the Giants, they got a long road trip here in May. In fact, May is pretty brutal on the Giants. This upcoming road trip is going to be 3 in Atlanta, 4 in Philadelphia, and 3 in Pittsburgh before they return home. Aside from the two Padres games on May 1st and 2nd, they only have one homestand in the entire month of May. They have 7 more home games at home, or I just was redundant there. They have 7 home games in May, 18 on the road. So it's a pretty brutal month for the Giants.
Yeah, but I'm going to give them a little – their offense is starting to click, and look at these ballparks they get to hit in this month. Yes. Atlanta, decent hitter's park. Philly, definitely a good hitter's park. Pittsburgh, it's an okay park. It plays a little like AT&T at times. And then the second road trip goes to Houston, Wrigley, and Colorado. So their bats might be able to carry them through this month. This could be one of their higher-scoring months, or if not, of the whole season.
Yeah, they're poised to –
I was going to say, there's more runs
to hit well, for sure.
Yeah, they score on the road. They do. And they showed it on the last road trip in Anaheim. And I think that that's the kind of stuff we can expect to see in Atlanta and at least Philly.
Yeah, Atlanta's leading the NL East right now with a 19-11 record. They've been a big surprise this year. They just overtook New York. Philadelphia, also in the East, is 17-13, 2 games back of the Braves, and Pittsburgh is also above 500, 17-15, 2 games back of the Brewers. So, yeah, all three teams are facing are over 500 at the moment.
Yeah, everybody's going to find out what they're made of on this road trip. I really feel like it's one of those for the Giants, and if they come out of it with a 7-3, 6-4, I think that bodes well for the continued success of this season. Yeah.
All right, well, I think that's going to do it for episode 141 of the TortureCast. I know that Eric is still putting up his torture report. In fact, do you have one going up tomorrow?
I do. I will have one going up tomorrow. There's some stats and stuff that I didn't manage to squeeze in here, so you can look for that tomorrow morning.
Okay, fantastic. All right, well, you can follow us collectively on Twitter at TortureCast, like us on Facebook, easy to find, or you can follow us individually at 2OutHits. That's with the number 2 for Eric, and I'm at Chad K. 21. You got anything else, Eric?
No, that's about it. Torture Report Weekly, and you'll hear from us again after the Giants win a bunch of games.
Yeah. Well, let's hope for a successful road trip. We'll see you sometime next week for episode 142. Until then, this is Chad signing off. We'll see you next time. Ba-boom.
A big thank you to everybody for listening to the Torture Cast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. Follow us on Twitter at TortureCast. You can also like us on Facebook or check out our blog at torturecast.com. I also want to say thank you to Ashcon and Bailey for letting us use their song Feeling Like a Giant for our intro. For Ben Lee and Chad King, my name is Willie Dills saying, we'll see you next time.